something. Oh, 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 yeah, we up to something. Yeah, yeah, 2024, the first episode of the Swerve City Podcast in 2024. We are here on the road here in Atlanta with not only my man Montezzi. We do this every episode, every week, 71 episodes, locked in Swerve City Podcast, you know what it is. But we got some special guests over here. Y'all been going crazy in 2023 over the great TikTok dance, the great song Big Pressure and the Big Pressure remix. Well, I had to bring in the man that produced the whole track himself, Prophet, the producer over here, special guest co-host, co-host of the Swerve City Podcast starting 2024. We here in Atlanta, and we had to bring in the man, a legend that means so much to the city of Atlanta, so much to the history of the NBA itself. The way you see it, the way you view it, the way you watch it, it's completely been revolutionized since the 80s and the 90s because of this man right here. Top 75 player in the world of all time. Of all time. Basketball, NBA, of all time. He is on your posters, your father's posters. He's been on, shoot, every highlight reel you can think of. Whenever you watch the dunk contest, they talk to this man. They bring this man in because he's one that revolutionized the sport. One of the top 20 scorers of all time in NBA history. Mr. Dominic Wilkins, how's it going,
legend? Good, man.
How y'all, how you guys doing? Everything?
Thank
cool
you.
Again?
Thank you for the time.
Thank you, legend. Thank you.
Thank you for just spending time with us, having us come into your lovely home. The place is amazing.
Thank you.
I love coming to Atlanta, and now I love Atlanta altogether just because you made this place so much more special to me, you know, and you made this place
glad
special.
Glad to have you guys.
Yes,
man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And this man right here has been geeking all day, all last night. You couldn't wait to get
I ain't never seen Prophet smile that much, bro.
Never. Never. This man is a Grammy winner. He's been around some of the greatest artists in the world today. He shut down the studio to come to do this today. Oh, he kicked people out of the studio to be here.
Man, listen, man.
That's why I had to sit next to you.
This is everything for me.
Yes, sir.
Y'all don't understand, bro. This was it. Growing up in Chicago, it was Mike and Dominique for me.
In Chicago, I wouldn't expect anything else, but, you know, Mike being your guy. I mean, he was a household, you know, still is to this day, of course. You know,
right.
Michael, a fierce competitor. We had a lot of great, you know, time together as players, and a lot of respect for Michael. And I tell you, Michael brought it every night, bro. he was something else. Something else.
Yeah, man. And, like, I love at that time, there was such a competitive nature. Y'all weren't trying to, like, team up with each other. They are trying to go at each other. Y'all wanted to battle. Y'all wanted to build y'all franchises under your names, under your willpower, under your work ethic.
Well, the thing I always say is the only way you can measure your greatness, you got to play against the greats.
Yes.
That's your measuring stick. And none of us wanted to play with one another. We wanted to compete and see how we stacked up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the most important part of our interaction, competition, and, you know, just basically competing against one another.
Yes. And it wasn't to make someone play, like, be worse. You just wanted to be better. And the next person just wanted to be better.
You wanted to be better, you know. Yeah. And so you play against the best players in hopes that you can reach some of the goals that they've reached. Or compete on the same level coming in as a rook, that's your goal, is to compete with the greatest player. Then at my position at small forward, I had a superstar player every night. You
know. It wasn't the three playing the one, the one playing the four.
No. You had Larry Bird at 6'10" and playing the three. You had Dr. J. You had Bernard King. You had Larry Nance. You had James McGrady, Mark Aguirre, English. Damn, I can go on and on.
Look, yes.
And we had to guard each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ducking. You got to guard each other, man. But, you know, I used to say to myself, you know, these legendary players, I know I got to guard them. But I'm going to make them worry about me, too.
Yeah.
And so I didn't worry about them as much anymore. But I learned a lot from all of those guys, playing against all of them, because they brought something that was very valuable to the table. They were competitors to a whole different level. I mean, I don't think people really know how good James Worthy was.
Yes,
man.
Yes, you know,
and we didn't compete in high school because we were in different zones in North Carolina, but we came out the same year. And our senior class years ago got voted as the greatest senior class ever to come out of high school across the nation. because of the guys. We had 24 guys who were Dream Team All-American, all 24 played in the NBA.
You know, Jesus.
Some players back then, man.
You think it's the upbringing now that's stemmed that type of mentality, that instinct?
Well, the only way that you could be known back in, especially in those days, because you didn't have social media, we didn't have cell phones and all that, you know, it was word of mouth or by newspaper. So correct. If you made it to McDonald's All-American, for example, that means you was a baller. You arrived because it was hard to make in those days. And you know, some of the guys that was on that McDonald's team, I mean, became stars in the pros. So it that was, again, talk about having a measuring stick to see how you stack up. It started for me in high school, you know, 10th and 11th grade. That's where it started.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Some monsters back
then. But how was that, though, being the – it's different from – well, you know, we was talking off the record. It's different when, you know, you might be a part of the team. But your situation, you're the man. So from high school, college, to the pros, you're the guy. So, you know, with that kind of pressure, even playing against those great legends that you mentioned, how was that for you, saying, you know, I got to get a bucket every night?
Well, for me, it ain't even off the record. It's true.
Absolutely. Hey. You know,
I mean.
Yeah.
You had to bring your A game. I remember coming to five-star and BC camp, basketball camp. Like, man, all the greatest players in the country was at this camp. And you had to bring your A game. You had, you know, one thing I never wanted to do is just fit in. I wanted to make a statement.
Yes.
And I remember coming to McDonald's game. I got there a day late. And so they put me in practice. And before I got in, James Worthy was working everybody. And I said, you know what? I got to make a statement. And I remember the ball hit the rim. And I went up and caught it. And I threw it across my body. I'm looking in the rim. And the gym erupted. And they said, that's that small, skinny kid from North Carolina, you know. So it was just a start for me at that moment because I wanted to see how I stacked up. I mean, you had Worthy. You had Terry Cummins. You had Clark Kellogg, Isaiah Thomas, you know, Steve Stepanovich, Sampson, Bowie. We had some, man, we had players that were game changers, you know, in that All-Star game. So I had to prepare myself mentally. Because I've never seen all these guys play, you know, before. Because, again, you didn't have the social media. You didn't have – none of us was on television at that time. It was all about word of mouth and newspapers and publications as far as basketball. That's how you got known.
So let's go back, all the way back. Everything for me is about the journey. Mm-hmm. Born in France. Mm-hmm. How did you get to America? How did things progress from there?
Well, how I got to the States, my dad was in the military. Okay. So my sister and I was born there, and he moved back. I think we lived in Europe the first 5 years of my life. Then we came to Baltimore, Maryland. My father got stationed at, I think it was Fort Meade or somewhere like that. I can't remember where it was. And so we came, and we grew up in the streets of Baltimore. You know, that's where I grew up at. You know, if you see the movie The Wire.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It
was filmed in areas where I lived.
Oh, yeah.
So the Wire work,
Yeah.
So boarded up housing.
I grew up around that. Ain't nothing fiction about that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's real.
Right.
And so in those little small communities, basketball was big. You know, you rarely ever talk about baseball and stuff like that and football. Basketball was big in those neighborhoods. But for me, I started out in track and field. I didn't play organized basketball until 10th grade, but it was track and field. That's where I got my endurance. That's where I got the speed from track and field. I was a quarter milers.
Yeah.
You know.
You know how to glide in the air and jump in and stuff.
You know, it prepared me for basketball. You know, basketball was the second sport I played. Actually, it was the third sport I played because I played basketball after track and field. And so playing basketball on the playground in Baltimore, you learned the game. And I had a playground legend in my neighborhood taught me how to play. And he said, I'm going to teach you how to play this game. You're going to owe me, but not like you think, because I'm 12 years old. I didn't know what that meant. But he said, the only thing I want from you is to give to someone else what I'm about to give to you.
Mm.
And he gave me courage to leave home when I was 16 and got discovered the next day on the playground in North Carolina. So that's where the journey started, on the streets of Baltimore, because you had to be in a gang to go from 100 blocks to the next. Because I played basketball, it was hands off. He said, he's going to be the first one to get out of the neighborhood. Nobody touched him.
Did you feel pressure with all that? Or is it like more, this is just like you just going through fun and this is like just building?
It was more fun for me.
Yeah.
I didn't really feel a lot of pressure until the older cats used to make me play basketball against older kids for money.
Yeah.
They used to pay like, you know, $15, you know, a game. And if I win, they give me like $4. And they kept saying, hey, man, you know, I'm doing all the work, though. I should get paid more than that, right? They said, nah, young fella, young blood. We paying the money. You just keep doing what you're doing. Be quiet. You know, you're in the hood. What you
going to be quiet? Do? Quiet. You know? Don't keep talking again. But,
you know, those streets, the streets took care of me. You know, they were like my brothers.
Yeah, you know?
And they never let me get in trouble. Not once.
So that's a different thing, the community taking care of like the talent.
Old,
yeah, I was going to say.
Old heads took care of the young guys, man.
Yes.
They didn't get them involved in what they were doing. They kept us away from that.
Yeah.
It ain't like that anymore. The old cats now, older kids, they bring the young fellas in, which is, you know, is wrong. You shouldn't do it that way. If you know, you do what you do, but, you know, help them have a future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it should be about. That's what they did for me.
So 16, you go to North Carolina. What happened?
Well, I caught a Greyhound bus in North Carolina, and the kids was playing basketball, and I got to get off the bus. I'm looking, and that's when I start playing. And after I finished, I'm sitting on the ground. This older gentleman comes. He said, hey, son, you live here? I'm like, I'm not sure yet. He said, where you were going when you live here? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure yet. So he looked at me. He said, come go with me. I don't know why I followed him. I went to his house. Showed me a kitchen, bedroom. He said, you can have all this. The only trade-off is you have to play for my high school team. He was a high school coach.
Mm.
And that high school went 76-1 in 3 years. In the state of North Carolina.
Jesus.
Ooh. Wait.
Couldn't be beat.
Invested.
He knew you was coming? Or
no, he didn't know I was coming. I would just happen to be playing basketball with some of the players from his team that was on the playground.
So this is all happens. You just left home.
Yeah, I just left home. Because I said, told my mom, I said, I'm going to go to North Carolina. Maybe I can get a start in basketball.
Maybe. On a maybe.
Yeah. And I left. And I remember my brother, my mom told my brother, came and said, where's Nicky? And my mom said, he's gone. Yeah. And they caught back up with me 8 months later.
Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He'll be all right.
Yeah. The high school team was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous, man. And we played a lot of 4A, 5A schools. We were 3A school. In North Carolina, that's basketball mecca.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have a run like that. And that's one of the greatest high school runs in history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing too many young kids have that type of bravery to just go out in the world. It's like parents kind of like got to push their children out like that.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. You know, even in high school, we believe in bonding together, sticking together.
Yeah.
You know, I did that one high school. I didn't go to multiple high schools and all that. You know, now today, kids travel to be on the best teams.
Yeah, everybody's recruiting.
But we wanted to play the best team.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to see what you got. So it was a rank, it was in the top six teams. And I remember when our point guard said, I would love to play 1-5. We really see who the best is. So that was just our mentality.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, three or four of the guys on the team was first cousins. Yeah. We were first cousins. It was crazy. It was crazy. You know, Little Washington, North Carolina, a small town, and all my family on both sides of my family are from there.
Mm. Yeah. So coming to the league, you pretty much knew – that you were in that core group of guys that were like, I'm not sure if you had the mentality that you were going to change the way the NBA was going to be played, or maybe you were.
Man, I told my mom at I was 12 years old that I was going to be in the NBA.
You had it then.
I knew it.
I knew it. What gave you that? What gave you that intuition, that feeling?
Because I used to play with older kids
and
how I stacked up. Well, I was playing against guys 14 and 15, and I was holding my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I just knew it. And as I had my growth story. I went to high school, I was 6'3". When I first went to high school, and my 11th grade, yeah, I went to 6'8". You know, and so it was.
If I was 6'8 in high school, I kind of have an inkling I'd be in the NBA as well.
But you know, it was, I felt from a talent standpoint and but my drive, I was not going to be denied. And again, I wasn't one of those kids that's going to come in and just try to fit in and play a role.
For sure.
So I wanted to be great. That was my goal because I saw my mom struggle the year raising 8 kids, and I wanted to do something special. So that was my motivation and drive.
Well, so with that drive, like, okay, so you know, you go to Georgia, you're in college, then, you know, you're on your ascension to the pros. So now at this point, when, you know, you come into the league, obviously you are, you know, the star, you're the guy. And when everything starts from the 80s, obviously you see when you come in the league, you got Magic running things. You got Larry running things. What statement did you want to make when you came in to solidify yourself different from what everybody else was doing?
I wanted to be known as one of the guys who helped change the game when I came in. You know with Dr. J, he changed the game. David Thompson changed the game. Iceman, you go down the line, guys who changed the game, like from go back way of Wilt and Russell. And so I wanted to be one of those guys to help change the game. And again, not coming in just thankful that I'm here.
Yeah, thank you for the and job I'm saying, type look, of mentality.
It was something in me was like, hey, you are meant to be here. This is what you were built for. And so I wanted to come in and make a statement from day one. You know, I played the game at one speed, and that was all out all the time. I didn't know any other way to play. And so that stems from that tough neighborhood background. My mom, who was a soldier, she was tough, toughest person I ever met. And then, you know, coming right in high school is my greatest coach I've ever had, as my high school coach. And taught you how to be a man first, a player second.
Those are the greatest coaches.
If I can teach you how to be a man first, teaching the game of basketball is easy. The
greatest coaches do
right.
that.
He was right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So how was the locker room talk? Because, like, now you kind of see how a lot of guys know what's going on in other locker rooms because it's kind of, like, out there. It kind of gets, like, just
well, you know what?
Blurred out there. How do you know what's going on in the other locker room, other teams, other, like, what's the
– You know what? We didn't care what was going on in the locker room. We cared about what's going on in our own locker room. We didn't give a damn about what's going on in Celtics or the Lakers or the Bulls.
Any of that information
and
ever
neither,
get back
and
to y'all?
And they didn't care about what's going on in our locker room either.
So none of that ever got back to y'all in y'all locker room, y'all camp or anything? Nah. Like, no?
No, because, again, we didn't let that stuff in our locker room.
Yeah.
Because we policed ourselves. And the only thing we worried about is, okay, we know what they can do. We do the scout reports. We see how great they are. How do we interrupt that? So we got to be more concerned about ourselves. And we, you know, basketball, when I played, we were a family. We did everything together. Went to movies together. We ate dinner together. You know, we supported each other in every way. Even if you didn't like someone, you respected them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we demand as a team. We respect. And nothing ever got outside that locker room to the media.
And
we had a rule. What goes on in the locker room stays in the locker room. And if it gets out, you know, so you had to deal with that in practice the next day.
I miss that mentality a little bit.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, that's the way it was. But you know what? It kept everyone respectful and believing in each other. Even, I mean, you have a situation where guys get into it in practice. It might be an all-out fight in practice between some guys. Do you know when practice over, you know what they say? Let's go get something to eat. Where we going? It was never personal.
Never personal.
Never.
Absolutely.
I say this all the time. This is going to sound crazy, right? When you're in the heat of battle, especially in practice, or when you're going through a bad moment, you know, you drop a couple games, and you get heated in practice, right? A good fuck you is healthy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You say to a teammate, you know, if it's something you don't like, you know, you tell man, you know, oh man, fuck you, man, you know, get yourself together. And you know what? We never ever took it personal. Because it was healthy. You know, it wake you up sometimes. You know what I mean? And so we had like 4 or 5 dogs on our team. You know, you got to have if you have 2 dogs, it's great. If you have 3, it's a bonus. And we had a lot of guys that took the leadership role from time to time.
Yeah.
It was good. It was great, man.
So with that being said, say like would you say it would be a benefit having like a Draymond Green on a team like that? Or do you want 2 of those or 3 of those? Is that like more, do you relate more to that?
Draymond Green does that. And if you know, you love him or hate him, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that gets him in trouble is the antics.
Right, right.
But mentality is falling, holding guys accountable and playing hard and tough and bringing that mentality. Every team needs that. You need a guy like that. I think, again, like I said, you know, the extra stuff that he does, you know, is a little much.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But, you know, he brings that dog mentality to that team.
I think there's, like, the difference with, like, now, the dogs now. They're more media-centric in a sense.
But I can tell you this, Draymond is not. He's not media. So? No. What you see with Draymond, I mean, you see it on the court. He just don't talk about it just in the media. He does it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, right. You see, okay. He does it in practice. He does it on the floor. You know, ain't a lot of guys do that. Not a lot of guys do that. And I think when you look at LeBron do it through example. He don't have to say anything.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, he ain't got to say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he expects you to, you know, be in line with what we're trying to do.
And I agree with that because every so often we're still shocked. Like, how is he still doing this? Because he's showing you.
He's showing you. And he works harder than anybody else to still do what he does.
There's a lot of preparation in that.
Yeah, that's why he's still not just still in the playing the league. He performing, man. You look at him like he got 40 tonight.
It's crazy.
Like, what, he 40 years old?
A casual 40.
I'm like, man.
Game on the line.
But if I'm a 25 year old, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
You know?
He wanted to, yeah.
So you pushed the boundaries of athleticism. During your time, did you ever feel pressure to constantly deliver those human highlight reel moments?
No, because, like I said, I played all out all the time, so it was just a part of my game. You know, I tried to do something special in the game just to get the team fired up, get our home court fired up.
Gotcha.
That's what that
get the was crowd for. Up.
See, because when people see highlights of me, what do you see?
Dunks.
Scoring.
Dunks. It's very difficult. Dunks. Very difficult to get over 26,000 points on dunks. Very difficult.
Yes.
I was a scorer inside, outside, mid-range, on the post.
Yeah.
Got to the free throw line more than 8-9 times a night. You know, dunks, I averaged 2 dunks a game.
Two. Wow.
I was telling my boy Ray, I was like, yo, I remember this game and you gave the Bulls 52. I was like, yo. And then he turned around. It was like 2 games y'all had to play back-to-back.
Yeah. Actually, it was 57.
57. Okay. My bad.
But
correction, young brother.
The problem was we had to go back to Chicago,
yeah,
and Jordan got 60. So, you know, I was, you know, celebrating, you know, to myself. But, you know, I didn't celebrate too much up front. The guys didn't like that. You know, I didn't play the last 8 minutes of that game. You know, because, you know, we had a big lead.
Right.
Coach said that's enough, you know. But, yeah, it was fun playing against Mike, man. Mike brought out the best in you, man. If you didn't come with it.
Phew. I can imagine. And I love those. I love those, like, okay, this is not going to be just, like, the casual night. Like, even in the ring, I'm like, okay, I can't just coast tonight.
If you're playing a guy and you know what he's going to bring every night, right, you better be on top of your game. Because he's bringing his A game. And so I didn't realize, not until recently, that Michael and I, our careers against one another, we averaged over 30 against each other.
Oh, God.
For a whole career.
Oh, my God.
So here's my question, right? When we talk about going against the best, who were some of the people, you know, obviously, I don't know if it's true or not, but from what I've heard, Mike wasn't really a talker, right? Unless you got him going.
No, I heard he's a notorious trash talker.
Or there's certain people that could get you going. If you know, I know you like speak on Larry Bird, stuff like that, but people who could get you going, were you more like, okay, if you say something to me, this is what's going to happen, or was you always like linear focused no matter what it was?
Well, one thing I tell you about Mike was so focused. He didn't worry about talking until you got under his skin.
Mm-hmm.
And he going to let you know what he really is about.
Right.
You know, he had guys, and first of all, it's a saying, don't awaken a sleeping giant.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
When you start talking trash to a great player, you're putting yourself at risk of getting annihilated out there on the floor. And Michael did it night in and night out. It was certain guys I didn't like. And if you talked, you're going to have a long night. You're going to need help. And I guess the way I thought. But I wasn't a talker. But there's certain guys I did talk a little trash to, but, you know, I don't know if I like him to this day. But, you know, No, I'm just kidding. I just think guys that I'd love to compete against, you know, played my position, you know, that we didn't talk a lot to each other. You know, myself and Scottie Pippen didn't talk a lot. Myself and, and Worthy didn't talk a lot. I can go down the line, guys. We didn't talk at English. Danley, none of us really talked a lot. You know, only reason I talked to Dr. J because he was my idol.
Yeah. You know,
I love Dr. J to this day. And Larry Bird and I never talked. Ever.
It's hard to find someone who actually did have, like, casual conversation with Larry.
Hey, we didn't shake hands for 13 years.
I missed them days.
you want it back?
Man, look, man, I ain't signing your jersey. I'm not waiting after game over and come shake your hand. We ain't doing, especially if I lost. You know, man, we did that. But if you lost and got your butt kicked, man, you going straight to the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't shaking nobody's hand.
So what were your thoughts on, like, because it was just, like, still one of the most historic moments when, like, the Pistons just got their ass handed to them, and so they got the revenge back, and they just, like, clearly walked off as the game was closing.
No, at the team that I played, we didn't do that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially in the playoff. If we got knocked out, you know, good luck next round, man.
And then,
even with the Celtics, and we love to hate each other, when the Celtics beat us, I mean, you know what, you're Eastern Conference, man. Keep it in the Eastern Conference. Good luck to you guys. It was like that.
Mm-hmm.
But during the course of a season and during the season, we didn't do a lot of that.
Mm.
What rivalry did you have to help shape your game?
Well, first of all, it was Chicago, for one. Boston Celtics, for the other team. New York Knicks, Philly. Cleveland. Cleveland had great teams back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had great teams back then. The team that nobody talks about to this day is Milwaukee in them days.
Sidney Moncrief and all those.
Moncrief, Lanier, Sigma, Ricky Pierce, and all that. Marcus Johnson.
Yeah.
They were the beast, man. But the thing about the East was so good, you know, you were lucky if you can get out the first or second round. Because everybody was good in the East.
Everybody was good.
Yeah, everybody was good.
But also everybody played together, too, coming up, too, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, all those teams, you see a lot of movement. Guys, right. Especially star players, they stayed on those teams, you know. That's what made it so hard because they built the chemistry. And so, you know, you had to make sure you didn't make a lot of mistakes when you played against those type of teams.
Man. So coming up to compete with Jordan in the dunk contest – did y'all know that y'all are making something just so, like, memorable? Like, because you raised the bar so much that Jordan had to start jumping from the free throw line.
I don't think we,
at
the time, realized how big that was going to be.
Right.
Because we were just competing. Jordan and I just love competing against one another. I love watching him play and competing on that type of level. So he just brought out the best of me. I tried to set the tone early, and I did. And it came down to the very last dunk. Now, do I think I thought I won? Yeah.
It's a lot. I think a lot
of people did.
Probably.
I do, too. Yeah, but, I was going to say, I do, too.
But, you know, in Chicago, that's a hostile environment, man. Yeah. It's hard to win there. Man. But, you know, I will give Mike a lot of credit, man, because he said to me, Nick, you know you won. But you're in Chicago.
Home field advantage, man.
He said you won. But he and I, up until about 3 years ago, we never talked about the slam dunk contest. Never once. Mention who won, who did. We never, because it's a kind of a unspoken thing. We knew what we brought, and no matter who won, is my opinion, it's the greatest dunk contest ever. The fact they're still talking about it 30 some years later, you know. But you had superstar players, competing.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
You got to see the stars really loose.
Yeah, you could look at those dunk contests. A lot of the great athletes in the league did it. My first one with Dr. J and Larry Nance and Daryl Griffith. There's some high flyers, you know. And so you had the best athletes in the league doing the contest.
But how is that though? I have to give him a shot. How is it watching Spud Webb do this at that time?
You know.
Because he's a
Spud didn't tell me the truth. You know, he won against me, right? In Dallas, his hometown. And some of the dunks he did, I've never seen him do that in practice. He never showed us. I'm like, man, I didn't know you can do that, man. You lied to me, Spud. You've been hiding.
He's cocking back windmills on the, like, two-foot vert.
Yeah, man.
I mean, that's insane.
That small, you know. But I was happy for him because he was my You know, Spud was one of my best friends.
Yeah.
So I was happy for him to win. But anybody else competed, I, you know, if they would have beat me, I wouldn't have been happy. You know? But it was because, again, it helped shape his career when he won that.
For sure.
How did you approach those competitions?
Especially with creativity.
I never practiced.
Jesus.
I was just doing dunks I did in the games.
All the greats say that.
I never practiced on dunks and practice before contest. Never.
I'm done.
Man, what? I mean, because there was a lot of dunks I did was game dunks.
In-game dunks? No,
they were in-game dunks. So it wasn't like I need to go and, I mean, look, because I took it behind my back, under my, I could have done that, all that. But I wanted just to do game time dunks in the dunk contest. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I never, and I swear to you, I never worked on it in practice. Never. I was thinking of stuff as the dunk contest went on. I'm like, okay, let me try this one. Let me try that one. I didn't work on
come
that.
In with a
and
set
neither,
list.
And know what? The craziest thing is, neither did Michael. Wow. He didn't work on that stuff in practice. That stuff he doing in games. Look at Michael's dunks.
It's pure adrenaline.
Yeah, man. Game time dunks, man. He was doing that stuff in games.
So, you know? How are your thoughts about like the evolution of it now? Like people are jumping over cars, people putting cupcakes and stuff on the backboard. Man, it's getting there's a lot of gimmicky. I believe I can fly.
Fun. It's fun, but your creativity comes with a basketball, your shoes, and imagination. That's it. Hey, these guys need to look at. The young man who won it this past year is like, hey, man, we got to come and do something different. This is a guy coming in from a G League.
Yeah.
Yeah, McClung was killing it.
Hey, man, he earned it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He made it look easy. He really did. But I will say, who really brought the slam dunk contest back in a major way
Zach.
Was LaVine.
Zach.
And Eric Gordon.
Gordon going to go down and have the most 50 points. Scores to never win.
Insane.
Figure that one out. I know how you feel.
He said, you can relate if anybody can relate.
You're at the podium like, what are you doing 50?
They were so much fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I was glued to the TV when they were doing it. They put on a show.
That was the last time. It was just like, no, keep going.
Yeah.
No, they put on the 50, show. Keep going.
They put on the show.
My goodness, man. And that was like one of the last few times I've seen people run out on the court when somebody hits something. And like on their first attempts, too. Not like getting three, not getting 425 seconds.
I mean, yeah, they had some gimmicks out there, but they made them gimmicks look theatrical. They really did. And so I enjoyed that dunk contest.
Man.
You know, the after us, one of the biggest dunk contests was Vince Carter, of course.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, it was down for a long time.
Gordon
brought it back.
I've seen that. I was like, I went out in this rabbit hole of like some of those like dunk contests in between that time. And it was like a long stretch, a couple of years. It was just like, all right, well, who are we pulling out here? There weren't too many stars. It wasn't star studded. The creativity wasn't there. And also, like a lot of media was not catching a lot of attention of it either. That's why we forget a lot of them.
And as I look at, what's his name?
McClung. Yeah.
He just played up to the crowd. Then he went out, man, and he for a little. See, little guys really look good in a dunk contest. Mm-hmm. Really got
for sure,
ability.
Right?
And he just made it look so easy. And again, it was a show. He put on a little show. And I'm saying to myself, all right, the other guy's gonna have to bring it because he set the tone, you know. But you know, it was a good dunk contest. So I'm looking forward to seeing. The lineup for this year.
Yeah, same. Yeah. So now, like, once again, another evolution of, like, basketball that had nothing to do with the NBA as much. You're seeing and-one and street ball. You're seeing, like, a lot of just, like, flashiness. Way more flash than actual substance. But it's still, like, touring. It's still doing marketing, merchandising, stuff like that. And then, like, it's almost like what y'all really – created you and Jordan and Spud and all those guys really created some another form of.
I'm excited for these guys.
Yeah,
you know, I really am.
The summertime street ball. It was all over the place.
Well, I'm excited for the guys because they're creating their own brand, their own corporation, and now a lot of the stuff that they're doing is being monetized.
Yeah,
it wasn't back then, but hey, I'm all for these guys. You know, trying to invent themselves, put themselves in a different.
They try to create theirs. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Hey, you know,
like there was a, like I know at the time there was a lot of NBA players that were just like, "What are you doing? You're bastardizing basketball." It's like it's really kind of shunned upon in this.
Well, it changes every era. It changes, and so you have to make that change with it, you know, and because the evolution of sports, and I don't care what sport you're in, things change, and so I think some changes are great, some changes, you know, you question, but for the most part. From a branding standpoint with these guys, I'm all, hey, more power to them. I'm all for it. You know, I have a young son coming up as, you know, 17, 6'10", 6'11", that, you know, hopefully have an opportunity to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So, we just didn't have the opportunities like these guys have today, and I'm happy for them, you know, that they can build their own, you know,
brand
kind of corporation, brands, you know. I'm happy for them.
You said you only average 2 dunks a game, and we know your game stretched beyond dunks. Mm-hmm. What aspects of your game do you hope influence this generation of ball players?
Well, I think my overall game, the way I played the game every night, I didn't take games off. Not unless I was just so beat up I had to. But, you know, as a rookie, I played all 82 games. Sheesh. You know, my first 4 or 5 years, I only missed 3 games. You know? And so – I just didn't believe in taking a lot of games off. Yeah, you have your games where you're banged up and coach, you know, hold you back or the doctors hold you back. But I felt like if I didn't play, I let my team down.
What was the
I played.
What was the biggest challenge you would say on or off the court that you had to overcome?
The biggest challenges, I think if you call it a challenge, is being able to make sacrifices to win games. And each year, you know, I had to sacrifice something in my game to help the team win. But I don't call it sacrifice. I call it improvement. You know, so I had to get better rebounding. I had to play better defense, pass the ball a little bit more. You know, so those things is – I looked at improvement more than a hindrance to my game because as a basketball player, you want to continue to improve and be the best you can be. And because we all have some flaws that we have to work on. But other than that, nothing else really.
Mm. What do you think about the evolution of the game now to where you see like a Steph Curry or guys like that shooting from half court and things
like that? Steph Curry has messed all these young guards up right now.
Mm.
Because everybody can't shoot it like him, you know. But he's changed the game from a shooting standpoint where three-point shot is the go-to shot now. And a lot of times, and I know you guys see this, where a big guy get the ball right under the basket.
Pass out.
And don't even look at the basket.
Yep. Pass it out. Disheartening.
You know, yeah, because, you know, early in the game, a 2 is okay to get early in the game.
Right.
You know, you're not going to lose by making a 2 early in the game. You still got a whole game to go. You know?
Right.
So, and it's a guarantee, almost a guaranteed point for you, you know? And so the 3 ball, I mean, everybody who shoots a 3 probably shouldn't be shooting 3. A lot of guys shouldn't be shooting that shot. But it's promoted, it's pushed, it's coached to take the shot. If you don't take the shot, you might come out of the game.
Yeah.
You know? But the guys like Steph Curry and Trae Young and all these great shooters, Luka and all that, hey, that's what they do. And everybody can't do it like that.
No.
Everybody can't do it like that, man. And, you know, when you look at guys like De'Aaron Fox and all these lot of point guards right now, they're great at it, you know. But you got centers shooting 3s now, you know. And some of them are really good shooters from that range. Other ones, that you're like, yeah, you might want to step in, you know. But the 3-point shot has changed the game, no question.
Yeah. From with the change of, like, the style, I think it's also been changed the business of the NBA as well.
Yeah, it definitely has.
Yeah.
And from a physicality standpoint, you know, it takes less wear and tear off your body.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Guys can play a little bit longer. So, hey, look, anything that improves the game of basketball, I'm all for. You know, and look, we had our time as players. It's their time, you know. So, you know, the way they play is the way they're going to play. And if it helps them win and become more efficient, hey, that's great.
I started seeing, like, a real shift in, like, the NBA, how it really became more business-oriented. You started seeing, like, there was a motive behind certain things, certain pushes, certain marketing and advertisements and stuff. It started getting thrown on the jerseys now. Now the jerseys are becoming like soccer style.
I would tell you this.
Yeah.
I wish it was like that.
I was about to say, that's what I was going to get to.
Hey, like, man.
When did listen, you?
I would have loved that. You know, because, you know, the branding, you know.
The branding is huge.
Helps put you in another whole atmosphere, you know.
Yeah.
You and your family. I mean, yeah, I wish we had all that.
You wish you had a Cash App logo on your jersey?
Man, look, like, Cash App, you know.
General
Motors. Whatever y'all want to put on there. You can put it on my number. I don't care.
Yo.
But I think it's great. I think it's great that they can brand themselves the way they brand. I mean, you know, I'm really proud of what they've accomplished. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Do you think that's altered the style of ball, though, and the team aspect?
Well, it shouldn't. It shouldn't.
Correct.
You know, playing the game is playing the game.
Yeah.
And the guys who really want to win, play that way. The LeBrons and the KDs and the Stephs and all these guys, that's the way they play. Now you see what Jokic has done since he's been in the league and how he's kind of helped transform that team. So, yeah, I don't think it should change the way you play. It does change the way you market yourself.
But do you think it is changing the way it's being played?
If I'll put it to you like this.
Yeah.
If that's all you care about, well, then you care about playing. Yeah, then it does hurt you as a team. But it's not – you don't see a lot of that, you know, from every team, you know. Yeah, you got people – I mean, look, it's selfishness in every level of life. Sports or anything else.
Especially professional.
Right.
So
you got a situation where you do have a little selfishness, certain guys. But overall – you know, these guys are trying to build a brand that can be a long-term situation for him and his family. And I'm all for them guys creating that.
So
all for it.
We were talking on the way here about, like, you see the Jordan brand, the Jordan shoe, et cetera. Why didn't we see more branding of Dominique?
Maybe sometimes you pick the wrong shoe.
No.
All seriousness, it's that he came in at the right time when Nike was struggling, and they picked the best player at the time to take it to different heights. And I got to tell you, I wish I'd have made that journey with him. I mean, be honest with you. You know, it's no, you know. I was with Reebok, actually, 30 years I was with them.
Oh, wow.
And it was a great ride. It was. It really was a great ride. But when you're talking about company taking care of you life after basketball,
man,
Nike has been the best.
Yes.
Nike has been the best at creating that for guys who've played under their brand. And I applaud them for that because they never forgot about those guys.
Yeah. You know. Like, do you think it would have been different, like, having, like, a team Reebok, like, you know, like, team Nike, team Jordan? There's, like, multiple people on the brand.
Yeah. I would have loved that.
Yeah.
I mean, because nobody even knew about the pump shoe.
You know, you don't think so?
I put it on the market.
Yeah.
You know, I was the one who really elevated the pump shoe, you know, because nobody knew about the pump.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the old saying, what have you done for me lately?
Right. Right. Speaking of what you know, what in that term of that statement, you know, recently, like a few months ago, you know, J.J. Redick made some pretty disparaging comments about players from the past, and you guys were guys that laid the groundwork. You know, what not only your opinion on what he said, but what do you think? Do you think as time goes on, guys of your caliber from your class, do you think there's disrespect of what you guys did for the game?
This is what I said, tell people. The fact they still mentioning Cousy. and all those guys who played back then still mention their names to this day, tell you how great they were. And for you to disrespect them in the way you disrespected them is totally wrong. And it shows me your lack of basketball knowledge when you can assassinate guys like that. And, you know, everybody told, oh, percentageally, he couldn't, you know, and hit a better percentage, so he should take this shot. The hell with percentages. When you can make a bucket in the heat of the battle and you create your own shot, not a drive and kick to somebody, you hit a shot. Yeah, that's a good percentage shot. When somebody drives, you got a good percentage. But what can you do when you got to be the one to make that big shot at the end of the night?
Mm.
And for like for me, for him to even mention Larry Bird, and when you talk about physicality, he has no clue.
Mm.
None. Because he went through some serious physicality and he gave it. So when you make the comparison, because I tell people it wasn't about Steph Curry or Larry Bird, it was the content in which he used it.
Mm.
It's to discredit what he did to prove his point. And his point wasn't valid at all. You know, and that's what I hate. I like, look, and I keep saying, we had our time, still time, but don't keep crapping on us to prove your point,
mm-hmm.
to validate yourself. You know, because if you throw enough crap on the wall, people start to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that was.
And then it's, I think we're getting revisionist history or like living in the moment a lot because like we're witnessing in real time these guys having their time being great. It's amazing. It's like, how come we didn't see so-and-so in the 80s do this? How come we didn't say so-and-so in the 90s do this? It's like, well, they wouldn't be doing it now if it wasn't for so-and-so and these guys in the 70s, 80s.
It's a standard bearer.
Yeah.
Every era that you try to emulate to be that next so-and-so. So someone had to lay the groundwork for you to do what you do and to even mention, like, when he said Larry Bird is not one of the three greatest scorers in the history, I'm like, you out of your mind. You crazy. That man has hit big shot after big shot every night.
He made defensive play. It's probably one of the best defensive plays in playoff history.
They gave so caught up in percentages.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, this guy might be a 45% three-point shooter. That's when someone is driving and kicking it to you. But how big is it when you can take the ball in the heat of battle, you look up the clock, and you do your thing and knock down a big shot to win the game
yeah.
every night?
I think it's different like tiers of conversation.
It's a different – I mean, so percentage don't mean a damn thing.
Right.
If you can't do it in the heat of a battle where you got to create your own shot. You know, so that's why, you know, so it's very misleading, you know. Mm-hmm. Percentage-wise, these are one of the – greatest three-point shoot as far as percentage, who cares?
Who cares?
Nobody care. They tell you how lethal he was.
You got to talk to the season ticket holders that were actually there in those stadiums going to those games, watching it night in, night out. Hey, you got to talk to the people that were training him, how he was feeling going out to the court to do that. Him. Yeah.
That tells you even more. I played against this man 13 years. I can tell you. You know, that's one of the greatest scorers. And forget about shooter. He was one of the greatest shooters, one of the greatest scorers. Larry could have averaged 35 points a game if he wanted to. He was a team player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had Hall of Famers on his team. He didn't have to. It took a lot of pressure off of him.
I don't see too many people coming out saying, telling them what they're going to do and going out there and doing it. I don't see that too often anymore.
He talks some trash, boy.
Yeah, I don't see too many people with that mindset anymore. Trash. It's like it's that PC weaponized verbal era now. Yeah. It's like you don't want to say something and have it just getting weaponized to you back.
You know what? My thing is just give appreciation to the guys who've done it before.
Yeah.
Just give appreciation. You don't have to go through all that other stuff. Just give appreciation. Appreciate who – I mean, I appreciate everybody that I've learned from, and I appreciate what these guys are doing today. You know, I don't crap on these guys just so I can be heard. But when you say something like what he said, you know, you should be checked on that stuff
because
it's wrong and it's invalid.
That's that business thing I be talking about, though. Like, now in that space, that's his business is to say those things to get these type of reactions, get these conversations started in other platforms.
About building your likes.
That's the business now.
That's the business.
That's the business.
It's all good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay to do that.
Yeah.
Make sure you had the right information.
Right.
Or do you think somebody should, you should have that backup?
Or you know what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, because now look at a Shannon Sharpe situation with the Cat Williams thing. Like, that's a business now. That yeah. is that yeah. that was the biggest yeah. boom in business I've seen.
That's
in
a bold move there.
Bold.
But
bold.
But I'm saying to myself, why? And he would probably say, why not?
You know? It's like, what do we, like, yeah. so what no, what do you lose in that situation?
No, you lose respect, man.
Ah. But you gain likes. Yeah, you gain like, a lot of clicks.
But, you know, respect, but the thing is, man, yeah, I would never want to be in a position where I had to do all that stuff. Because, you know what? How is it going to help you? Mm-hmm. You know? But, you know, people are different. They do different things. So, you know.
I think that, like, what are we benefiting from it? What are the, in I think a lot of cases, like, because that was filmed. That was held for a while, for like a week maybe. It was a conscious decision to go through him and his team to be like, yes, we are going to put you know this what? Out,
I would
weigh
say
those pros and cons.
I would say this, man. We shouldn't be doing that to one another.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be doing that. Shouldn't do this. You know, you have enough, you know, as being brothers, we all have enough to deal with. You know, don't add more on the plate, man. We shouldn't be doing that to each other, man. We should be trying to uplift one another. Instead of, now, if someone is just a bad person that needs to have some attention, okay. Mm. But just to go down the line and just start on brothers, man, it's just, I don't think it's cool. You know.
Vice President of the Atlanta Hawks, mm-hmm. how do you take your style of play or your aspect from the game to the front office?
Well, again, it's taking your basketball knowledge and being able to translate it verbally, you know, in the front office where, you know, they're looking for your expertise to help build the team or gain some knowledge about, you know, players or people in general. And so you got to be able to build those relationships with people. I mean, because basketball is one thing, but relationships are something totally different. Mm-hmm. If you can do both, build the relationships the right way, the right people, you know, you create opportunity.
Man, all I know is we gotta get you in the coaching position to build that relationship to get the Eric Spoelstra type contract right now. That's what I want to see from Dominic.
You got a nice one, huh?
Man,
what
dedication?
Yeah, but you know what, Spoelstra is a great coach.
He's also proven it.
Yeah, he's proven
to earn
it
that money.
Yeah. And Pat Riley knows it, mm-hmm. so that's why he got that deal. But I have a lot of respect for Eric Spoelstra.
Yes,
he's a wonderful guy.
Yep.
And he's a hell of a coach.
Is that the biggest contract coach history?
You know, you have to really want to do that. You know,
yeah.
Coach, you know, it's a lot to deal with. You know, a lot of time you have to spend. But I never discount or discredit anything. You know, I never count anything out of things I want to do. I'm a guy who, you know, experiment with a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah.
As far as business. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And furthermore, for what Prophet said, you know, you're obviously the greatest player in Hawks history. So what do you think about the current team now with Trae Young? And
well, I'm a Trae fan, Ice Trae fan. I'm a big Ice Trae fan. Trae,
you know,
ball out.
You know
bro.
What? He's a star. And
there's yes.
No question.
Yeah.
The thing is, we're going through a little, you know, inconsistency right now. But, you know, the Grizz Ring of the Light is still early in the season where you can change things. A couple of wins, say 3 wins can change where you set in the East, you know.
The East has always been like that,
yeah,
too.
So, you know, he's a hell of a young player. I love him.
Yeah.
He comes to play every night. And he's one of the most amazing passers I've ever seen.
Yes.
That boy can pass the rock.
Yes.
If I had him.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Championships, man. You know, a couple of rings, man. It made my life easy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, and you want like you want someone like a Trae.
Yeah, you want someone to the point guard like that. You always got to know where he's at.
You have to.
So now you can't double and triple team me.
Yep.
I'm like, you got to pick your poison here. So yep. To have someone like that to take that pressure off. See, I had a lot of really good players, and Doc Rivers and Kevin that ran for all. I had some monster players as far as toughness,
yeah,
guys who could play defense, rebound, and having Doc Rivers who really helped solidify my career. But they never had that other go-to guy.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, when they're pressuring you, you know you got to deal with him.
Man. Got a bucket coming, right?
Yeah. That's one thing I like. I like listening to Gilbert Arenas' show. He talks about, like, man, like, being a threat on the court is always going to help your team.
Yeah.
Being like
he goes
gunner.
A little left, too.
Oh, there's
goes a little left.
There's a filter. You got to filter some
he
of it.
Goes a little left.
He'll say a great point, and the next thing he'll be out of here.
I'm like, wait, huh? Wait, whoa, what? Why are we talking about his baby mama now? What? But, yeah, like, but I respect a lot of his opinion because, like, he's someone that done it, and he did it at a high level, and he's someone that did, like, drop 60-point games and stuff like that. So I like hearing the mindset of those complain. Guys. Yeah.
No doubt yeah. about that.
You know, oh, my God.
No doubt about the hibachi. Okay. Yeah, he was nice.
Who's your favorite player right now? If you say, if you turn into TV, say, I got to see this guy.
Yeah.
Who you like to see right now?
You know, outside of our team, because, you know, I love a lot of our guys, Jalen Johnson, Trey, Murray, and always got love those guys.
Shout out to Dejan. I like
but
Murray
outside
a lot.
Of our team, yeah. It definitely Jokic.
Jokic is a bad man.
I love watching play. I love watching.
Jokic is a bad man.
Yeah.
Guys like that. It's not one guy. It's multiple guys that I
absolutely.
Like. Dontage. You know, LeBron is going to continue to do his thing until he decides he want to go home and sit down and rest. I mean, you know, when you look at the Lakers, you know, you're like, man, it ain't no way they can win this game. You know, they just don't have the personnel. The next thing you look up, they're pulling off games that people don't expect them to win. Even with, you know, yeah, Asian players on the team, but they're always a threat because of him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a beautiful thing to see. I love that. I love like the from right now, like I've never seen a core group, like a crew of young dudes coming straight at like 19, 20 years old that kind of have like no fear. Like they don't care if you're like,
wait, the thing yeah. I said about him before.
Oh, who's this?
LeBron.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't have to say anything.
Yeah.
He'll come over and talk to his young players. He ain't got to raise his voice.
Yeah.
You know, but these players get in line.
These 20-year-olds, though, are coming out. They don't care. They're coming for, like, defensive player of the years. They're just slamming on them. You're seeing what Ja Morant's doing.
Yeah.
And, like, these guys have no fear, no regard. And it's just, like, attacking.
I mean, I love watching basketball, you know, every era. This era no different. I mean, I love the young players who plays with so much fun and authority the way they play. Anyway, like we got a young guy now like Jalen Johnson. I said to him last year, I said, your time coming. Mm-hmm. Be patient. And now he's becoming that glue guy.
Ooh.
On our team. I mean, I love watching. I love this kid, the way he plays. Plays the energy. It brings back memories, you know.
Mm. How often are you over there watching, coming and looking at him, talking to him? Like the.
Oh, I talk to them guys all the time. I'm always talking to the guys. You know, I got a great rapport with them.
For sure.
I got a couple just rapid fire.
Rapid junks.
A windmill or tomahawk?
Probably windmill.
Why?
This look good.
All right.
Greatest basketball player, in your opinion, and then your favorite player?
Well, I wouldn't say the greatest player that I would say in any era because it's so different. Every era is different.
It gets tougher.
It's, you know, every day. You know, and I tell people like this, Michael Jordan, you know, he win three championships back to back, retire, play another sport, and come back, win three more back to back. Is that your answer?
I put my hands up on that discussion.
Also,
long time ago.
Your favorite player, though.
My favorite player is Dr. J.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I grew up wanting to be like him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's as simple as that. You know, I thought he was God.
Man.
Still think he's God.
Yeah. I like how they predicted, how they presented him on the Showtime.
Yeah.
I was like, they did Dr. J really good on this show.
Yeah. Great man, too.
You've been involved in a number of philanthropic things outside of basketball. what drives you to do those things?
Well, healthcare is my calling. You know, helping people who can't help themselves, you know, with diabetes, hypertension, and now I'm into a lot of stuff dealing with people with special needs, hidden disabilities, making sure that their lives matter, too. We always talk about people's lives matter, just lives matter, but making sure people who are dealing with these disabilities, their lives matter, too, because a lot of times you ignore these people because it's too hard.
Mm. Very much so. So, Super Bowl prediction.
Baltimore Ravens.
Ooh. Ooh, my mom's a fan already.
Baltimore. I'm from Baltimore, man.
Yeah, they bad. They are bad.
I've been with them since they were the Colts. Now the Colts are gone. I'm a Ravens fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I met Lamar last year, too.
Player. Woo.
Really cool dude, too. Really cool dude.
He get it done.
Yeah.
Favorite dunk you ever witnessed?
I probably, outside of myself, okay.
Yeah, outside of yourself.
Okay. No, the greatest dunk, Dr. J. I had to go back. I mean, his, some of this stuff. The one he did against Michael Cooper, when he's coming down the baseline.
Oh, Coop. No, I'm sorry. We're sorry.
Coop, my guy. Cooper tell you, he, and I've seen some reason, he said he went up. I thought I was going to challenge, but he rocked it off the run.
Oh, we're sorry, beautiful. Coop.
Right. Now, look, I'm going to say this on the show because I spoke to him 2 days ago. So I asked Coop, I texted him. I said, hey, is there anything you want me to ask Dominique on the show? He said, yeah, when is he coming on my podcast? So that's what he told me to say to you.
You know, Coop is my guy. Tell him anytime he wants, I'll come on.
I'll pass the information.
Get it. I love it.
Advice for aspiring young athletes.
You know, work on the things that's most difficult for you. You know, sitting out there shooting shots or your favorite, you know, mid-range shots or dunks and all that, that's all great. But work on the other things that's most uncomfortable for you, because what that does is make you more of a complete player.
Yes. Man, this has been an amazing conversation.
Thank you, man.
Thank you for the time. Thank you for reaching out. Appreciate all this. My man, Prophet, appreciates this. More than anybody that I know in my circle.
My brother.
Oh, man, thank you.
No doubt.
Circle is growing.
No doubt.
We starting 2024 off on the highest note you could possibly do it. The legend himself here, Dominic Wilkins, windmill human highlight reel, top 75 player of all time.
I'm just human now. Highlight's gone.
No, you still a highlight, man.
I can't jump off
this
curve.
House is a damn highlight.
I'm about to say, you walk in this damn house is a highlight, but
I'm like, I remember that. Yep, man. Yep. But still get the same feeling. But yeah, so this is it, man. Subscribe to the podcast, youtube.com/SwerveCityPodcast. My mic just broke, but so we gonna take this out like here. You know what it is. Be confident in everything you do.
Wash your ass
and do your homework. This is it, Swerve City Podcast 2024.
I'll be watching you guys. You know, my brothers,
my man.
Yeah, yes, sir.
All right,
no doubt.